Hello, everyone, and welcome to Heavy Pod is Heavy Cast, episode 135. And, of course, we have our regular co-host, Cody, with us this week.
Hello, everyone.
That's it? That's all you gotta say?
That is all I gotta say. Just hi to the world.
Okay. Good episode, and thank you for listening this week. Good button. Okay. How you been?
You got it out of your system. You're going to restart the cast.
No, I'm not.
Yes, you are.
No, I'm not.
I'm going to argue with you until you do.
Okay. This is going to be the episode then.
No.
Yes.
No.
Content. That's how we create content, my friend. That is content.
We're not starting the podcast with just dumb shit.
Then we always start the podcast with dumb shit.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. I'm breaking the mold, man. Next level.
By continuing to doing this, you're perpetuating the dumb shit. Just give up and let us move to the actual topics. You're being stubborn. You can't win this battle. God. I control it. I post the podcast. You can't. You good?
I'm upset.
Yeah, you can't beat me here. You can't out-troll me.
I'm not trying to. Well, I just wanted a good start to the podcast.
No. And see what you've done? It's been like, 2 minutes now and this is still going. Just give up. Let it go. Take a deep breath. Let the salt flow through you. You good?
It's ruined. The whole podcast is ruined now.
No, it's been made much better as a result of this. Okay.
I'm a little salty. You wouldn't just restart it, my ass.
good. Let the tilt fuel you. Come on. Okay. Speaking of being salty, let's talk about.
Are you kidding me? You're serious.
Let's talk about Revolver's essential new metal albums list. Okay.
Okay.
So Revolver posted a list of 20 new metal albums that they consider to be essential. And we all know listicles are, you know, the height of content and they're the objective truth and they're like the definitive thing. Like, now that Revolver have posted this, there can never be any other list of new metal albums and their opinion is law, right?
Case closed.
Okay. Now that we have that, let's evaluate this list. First of all, I take issue with lists that are in ascending order.
That's kind of contentious.
So, are they saying number one is the best or not? Doesn't matter. By putting it number one, it's like low-key implied that that's the case, and there's basically no way to get around it unless you do an alphabetic or like chronological list. So if you're going to number something, number it in descending order.
The way I see it is people just want to know whatever publishing or news or magazine thing is declaring as the best.
Sure.
They want to either feel validated or they want to challenge their own opinions.
Yes, that is the entire point of
listicles. Actually, that's a little bit more that gives way more credit to the internet as a whole in the way they respond to things, but that's the way I see it. So by putting it as number one, it means that to me, they're either super confident in their choice or they really just want to stir the pot and cause a lot of controversy right from the get-go. You don't have to scroll to the bottom. I mean, honestly, it seems smart.
Yeah, but like, I don't know, like when you put like the best thing at the top, and that just makes me less likely to go to the tail end of the list, like especially like there's 20 albums here, right? So if there's something I see in the middle that I'm kind of like, you know, I disagree with this choice, then it's easier for me to just close the tab and navigate away than to be like, oh, let me see what their number one is going to be if this is here. Like, so by putting the one at the end, you keep people hooked, I think.
Yeah, but that's also more of a philosophy towards like what we do with long form content and you know, quality content. I think this is just like a clickbait tactic.
A listicle is not quality content to begin with.
Exactly.
So, like, no need to, like, try to up the game by, like, doing anything. Okay, we're spending way too
much. That feels like an argument towards what I'm saying.
I don't know. Okay, let's discuss the list.
Number one at the beginning of list is good because capitalism.
Number one at the beginning of the list is bad because capitalism. Okay.
Foiled again.
Number one is Korn by Korn. And it's the first Korn by Korn, not the second. Or did they make a third self-titled? I think they did. Anyway, it's the original.
94.
From 94.
Same year I was born.
Same year when I was 6 years old.
That's sick.
I mean, it's hard to argue with this. I think this album... Yeah, like, this album kind of created the genre, and, like, still, it kind of holds up for the most part.
Yep.
Like, I can't say anything, yeah. There, like, if they didn't include it, I wouldn't be super upset, but I can't be upset that they included it. You know, it's just, yeah, solid.
Okay, so, in the context of this list, I completely agree. But I also think that the biggest travesty on here is Slipknot is neither number one or number two. The Slipknot self-titled.
Yeah, I mean, Slipknot to me isn't exactly nu metal. So maybe that's... I'm a big, big nu metal guy. But, like, Slipknot to me has always kind of felt like they blended, like, nu metal with real metal.
Right.
So, like, I think Slipknot is super important. They're super big, obviously. Yeah, I think you're right. Slipknot should still be higher in this list. Okay, let's not spend too much time on this list. Let's just discuss ones that we, like, particularly feel strongly about.
That was one for me.
Okay. Sepultura's Roots, I think, belongs here. That album is great. And, again, like, one of the originators of the sound. And also, like, it led to the... you know, creation of Soulfly and whatnot. Like, it's a really important historic album. And, like, Roots is, like, one of the most iconic metal songs of all time, I think.
Absolutely.
I'm not a big Deftones guy. Do you want to argue for Deftones? Like, do you want to try to sell Deftones to me? Or, like, do you not care that much either?
No, I don't... I'm not huge on them. I really get their appeal. They do... I feel like they do something... that's very in line with, like, nu metal, and I feel like they do something that's no other band kind of does.
Post-nu metal.
Sorry?
Post-nu metal.
Post-nu metal. Yeah, that's a weird way to describe it, but sure. Basically, with Deftones, I think, you know, it's a completely valid choice, but I also think they're an acquired taste.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
But not like it, either you get it or you don't type deal.
Okay. No. Going a bit down the list, there's Limp Bizkit's $3 Bill, y'all.
Wrong Limp Bizkit album.
Yeah, right? Like, I think Chocolate Starfish and Hot Dog Flavored Water is the one, right?
Even in Insignificant Other is better.
So, like, I think $3 Bill, of course, it's, like, their first album, so it has, like, that rawness and the, like, Originator vibe. Yeah. And, like, Pollution is great, Counterfeit's great, Stuck's great, and, like, Faith is amazing. But, like, those are, like, the only good songs on the album. The rest of it is just kind of whatever. And, like, they kind of get outclassed by later stuff, whereas, like, with Hot Dog Flavored Water, they just go, like, they basically bring the AAA budget to, like, an underground sound, right?
Yeah, I totally agree. This is, like, saying that Nirvana's Bleach is the best Nirvana album.
Yep.
It's just, yeah, not correct.
So Fear Factory's Obsolete, I think, is a sweet choice. I can't go back and listen to, like, old Fear Factory these days. I find it to be pretty boring. But, like, back in the day, I was super into Obsolete. Though my choice of Fear Factory album was Digimortal. Obsolete is probably the more important and overall, like, better album. But yeah, like, I don't know, Fear Factory, I can't go back to them. Divine Heresy, I still do go back to, but Fear Factory is just kind of too basic for me.
Right.
Soulflies, fantastic album. It's probably my personal favorite from this list. I love Soulfly so much. And like this album led to the creation of them. It's not my favorite Soulfly album. That would be Dark Ages. But like this album is like, again, has that OG vibe. And yeah, Soulfly is sweet. I don't know. How do you feel about Soulfly?
They're playlist filler to me, and that's not to knock them. That's like, they're really great at what they do, but I don't want to, I can't sit around and listen to a whole Soulfly album.
Sure. Yeah.
Because they're kind of a one trick pony in what
actually,
they do. But.
I think the reason that it's not easy to sit down and listen to a whole Soulfly album is because they're not a one trick pony, in that they will have like a bunch of songs that are like pretty similar to each other in terms of nu metal, but then the second half of the album has a bunch of like, most albums from Soulfly have a bunch of like new age garbage. And that kind of like takes away from the momentum. And it's cool to listen to that shit like in isolation or once or twice, but like as a whole album, they generally kind of get a bit fatiguing. But I think there's still like cool stuff there. And I think the best balance in terms of that was in Back to the Primitive. Like where they really balanced the different aspects of their sound. And Dark Ages is their most focused album, which is why it's the best.
Yeah, I'm actually, it's newer, so there might just be some like honeymooning going on, but I really like that Archangel album.
Yeah, oh, that's really sweet.
I feel like that one, they kind of like took their sound in a different direction.
Yeah,
in a way that really appealed to me. But
Yeah. Yep. Like Max Cavalera, and we're going to kind of get back to this later during the episode. Like he kind of has been trying to like get back to his roots in the past few years. Like he reunited with his brother from Sepultura. Yeah. And like he's been trying to like bring back the OG death metal sound that he helped innovate. And I think he's like met a good balance of like doing that and like new stuff with Soulfly. So sweet. Slipknot, yeah, like that album is great. I don't know if it's my favorite Slipknot album. Actually, there's an interesting discussion to be had about Slipknot, but that's a long conversation. Maybe if we have time at the end, we'll get to it. I have interesting feelings about Slipknot.
I have an abridged version. So for me, Slipknot, they have a really good discography, where it's kind of like a speedometer, where they have like angry and angrier. And I like that I can sort of turn to the Slipknot self-titled for like a medium angry, and then go to like All Hope Is Gone for a less angry and stuff like that.
To me,
and still get the same kind, scratch the same itch.
To me, Slipknot has the problem that you described as Soulfly of like it being kind of too samey throughout the course of the album. Like it just kind of fatigues me. Especially with this album, but in general, their albums are pretty long, and they play in like a very specific sound. Even when they're doing like more mellow stuff, it's still kind of like a very specific Slipknot-y sound that kind of just can get a bit too much for me sometimes. But like earlier this year, I had like a Slipknot binge.
Yep.
I like them more now than I used to, but yeah, I still kind of get fatigued by them.
My hot take with the Slipknot self-titled album is that...
Stand closer to the mic. Yeah, there you go.
If they re-recorded it, it would be better.
I actually don't think that. I think the rawness is like a big
contributor obviously, to the sound. Obviously keep Corey's original vocal performance, but I feel like everything else, it like... if they tried to recreate the album today with the same kind of energy, I feel like you could get something really cool out of that.
But. I think it'd be interesting. I don't know if I would prefer it, but I would like to hear it.
Yeah, because it's already been remastered a few times, but I feel like a re-recording with just like would just be really interesting. There's one album I would really like to hear a modern version of, but
yeah. Scrolling a bit down the list, there's Mudvayne's LD50. So
you're skipping Wisconsin Death Trip.
I don't care about Static X whatsoever.
Ugh, okay.
I mean, you can talk about it if you want. I just absolutely do not care about them.
Well, Static X are just, they just have such a unique sound. I really like that it was included on this list, and I would have even placed it higher. But in general, it's just a super cool, super unique. It like
to me, Static X is just Boneless Fear Factory.
I'm having a hard time like just finding words for their appeal, but they do a cool thing. It feels good to me.
Yeah, I'm also just not like big into an industrial sound, so that might also be contributing there. So Mudvayne's LD50. So okay, Dig is one of the best nu metal songs of all time for sure. The rest of the album is not like super amazing. Like there's a lot of weird shit in there that's like pretty interesting experimental stuff, but the album itself is not that great. In fact, I would probably put their subsequent album, The End of All Things to Come, was that it? Above this one.
I haven't listened to too much Mudvayne.
Okay, sure. Linkin Park's Hybrid Theory, 100%, yes.
Yep.
If this list was ordered, I would argue that it should be higher.
Agreed.
And Systems Toxicity. Well, yeah. I mean, you have to put System on there. My personal choice of System album would be Hypnotize, but that's less nu metal. So I think for a nu metal list, Toxicity definitely belongs here. And, like, of course, it's like a much more important album.
Yeah, obviously, like, Toxicity is a much more, like, essential album.
Yeah. And the last few albums I don't really care about. I don't get the appeal of Chimera. They have always been like, except for like one or two songs, like aggressively boring to me.
I think they're just like one of those, you know, band in a van type acts who like have a cool album or something, and people are just into them because they work hard, but they're not. Yeah, I would say they're unremarkable.
Yeah, aggressively boring. That's what I'll go with. Okay, speaking of more new metal, so there's a new Sky Harbor song. Sky Harbor, for those who are unaware with them, is it fair to call them a gent band?
No.
What would you call them?
Directionless.
Okay. Yeah, well, I mean, they kind of got started early on with the gent movement. And they've kind of been, like, doing a bunch of, like, gent, new prog type of things for a while. And they've always had a bit of, like, that grassroots appeal because they started, like, early on in the scene. But I was, like, never big into them. So their new song has been a little bit controversial, which is why I wanted to bring it up, because like it's called Descent from an upcoming album from September, going to be called Sunshine Dust. This song is basically nu metal, right? Like pretty.
It's not basically. I think it's really clear that they're aping Korn in this. Like they try and like add some synths and do some like genty stuff, but it's like there's vocal melodies just pulled right out of Korn songs in this song.
Yeah. And it's whatever. It's like kind of, so the thing is, to be able to do like this type of thing in this day, you have to really have like a sweet hook. And I'm not talking about hook like vocal line, I'm talking about like overall selling point for the band. And I think this just doesn't have something like that. Right?
Yeah. For like, I don't think anyone was like really wanting like a gent band to make a nu metal song that sounds like it could just fit in the roster of nu metal. The like fit into the gamut, just whatever that is. And then, I don't think anyone was really like asking for that.
Yeah.
They're trying to answer a question that no one was answering, and you know, sometimes that pays off and sometimes it doesn't, but
what was the last worthwhile nu metal album?
You're Listening to the Hell.
That was a good one.
And that should have been on the Revolver list.
Eh, I don't think it's that significant. I mean, it's better than 20. Some of the albums that are on this list, but it seems like for this list, they kind of really valued historic impact. But yeah.
Yeah, fair enough.
You know what was not a recent good nu metal album? Suicide Silence is self-titled. That album is so fucking terrible. That, like, there are few albums out there that make me, like, actively really mad with how bad they are, and that album is one of them.
Why would you listen to it?
I listened to it, like, once to, like, because I just wanted to see how bad it was, and it was, like, unfucking believably bad. Like, it ruined my week to listen to it. It was so bad. And then, like, the last time I listened to, like, the second time and the last time I listened to it was, like, a few months ago when I remembered it existed because someone was, like, I saw an article about, like, best recent nu metal or something like that. And I'm like, no, that's fucking terrible. And then I was like, maybe I was having a fever dream because I remember this album being, like, comically bad and, like, maybe I was wrong. Let me just, like, go back into it with a different mindset. And I was like, holy fuck, like, who approved any of this? And it's, like, just as bad. So, like, fucking garbage. Okay.
Agreed.
So you said Sky Harbor is like gent / aimless. So by the way, there's a new Monuments song.
Hey, don't be dogging on my boy John Brown like that.
No comment. So there's a there's a new Monuments song. It's called AWOL. They're making a new album in October called Phronesis. I don't know if that's a made-up word. Probably not. It is Greek for a type of wisdom or intelligence. It is more specifically a type of wisdom relevant to practical action, implying both good judgment and excellence of character and habits or practical virtue. Okay. I just looked that up. So how do you feel about this song? How do you feel about Monuments?
It's pretty good, and I have a hot take that Monuments is the only legit djent band.
Okay.
And what I mean by that is I feel like even if their albums aren't, you know, album of the year worthy or like just like historically significant, they're still very entertaining. And they just double down on the shtick, and they do it really well, and they know what it's about. It's about like this raw, aggressive, almost thrashy kind of vibe, but with like some like modern touches and influences. And they're part of the meme of djent. I feel like they kind of like transcend that in a way.
So Monuments to me, like, I want to like them more than I actually like them. They have like some super great songs like Admit Defeat and Doxa and Degenerate and yep. I the Creator, I think, was the other one. Like, so they have like 2-3 amazing songs per album, but like the rest of the album is just nothing to me for both of their albums. And again, this sounds like a really good song, but like, I don't know if the rest of the album will carry it again. But yeah, I mean, Chris Barreto's a really good singer. Yeah, I don't like them as people, maybe, per se, but...
That's fair.
The music is good. Yeah, I think they're like a djent band that is just like straight up solid when they're firing on all cylinders.
Yeah, that's basically what... You said it better than I could have, but...
Right.
I agree.
Speaking of other... So this is interesting. So, Within the Ruins. I used to freaking love Within the Ruins. Like, Creature is a fantastic album. Invade is a great album. Elite is a mediocre album. Phenomena is a really mediocre album. Halfway Human is a really bad album that I keep forgetting exists. Like, Within the Ruins were a band that I have completely written off. Like,
right.
Because, like, There have been some like shenanigans with their guitar player kind of like using backtracks and like not being able to pull off the material and like having the guitars on the album sound extremely edited and then just like unplayable material that just sounds silly and bad. And also like starting from like an extremely technical band like OG Veil of Maya and then turning into just like chugs with like very few technical elements that they don't even play live. Like just kind of like this whole bad feeling progression throughout their career. So like when somebody posted a new Within the Ruins track, I didn't even listen to it at first, right? I was like,
yeah,
it's gonna be bad. And like their vocalist left, not that like the new guy doesn't sound too different, but like I mean he left, like he's been in the band for a while and like he's solid. So like, you know, like zero reason to have faith in this band.
Right.
But then I listened to this single, World Undone, and then they put another one, Resurgence. And man, these are amazing. Like World Undone, I feel is like one of the best songs that I've ever made. It's fantastic. It's still not like maybe as ridiculous and technical as some of their older stuff, but like it does a great job of blending that with their like other sound. And it's just like a really good song that hits on all notes. Like it takes everything that they've done well and like puts it together in a actually great fashion. Like the song has no downtime, no moments where I'm like, man, fuck this band. And it's just like super good. And I'm extremely hyped for it. I've been listening to it nonstop ever since.
Yeah. I was really surprised when I went to listen to the track as well, and it was it's super cool. All the stuff they do it feels really layered.
Yeah,
like there's like every single moment there's something like complex and intricate going on, but there's also like a really like basic and clever hook.
Yeah,
or like riff or like head bombing moment, and it's just always happening like simultaneously.
Yeah,
it's great.
Yeah, like for at least two if not three albums it felt like they were just kind of on autopilot, and it feels like finally they've kind of given a shit again, and it's amazing.
Caught their stride.
Yeah, and the new vocalist, like even at first, like I forgot that there was a new vocalist. Like I couldn't really tell the difference. But then when I paid a little bit more attention, he's actually, I think, better than the previous guy. Like he has more, like he sounds pretty similar for the most part. But then he has a few moments where he just kind of does something that's like rawer and harsher than the other guy. And it sounds great.
And as well, if he's in charge of all the vocals, I'm not quite sure.
The bass player does the cleans.
Okay, yeah, they're bringing, like, it's not amazing, but it's kind of what I was saying about Alkaloid earlier in the year, where, you know, if you just put a little bit of work into, like, the music part, you don't have to have the best voice in the world, and there's some serviceable, like, clean hooks in this song, yeah. Even though they're not, like, super melodic or the best singer or anything like that, it really serves the song in a positive way.
Yeah, it doesn't, like, they don't have an illusion of like being a clean singing band. It's just like an added layer there, like compared to Veil of Maya, which kind of were like, okay, we're gonna be a singing band now, but this kind of just like adds it in the mix.
It's like, hey, look at this tool in our toolbox. Yep. That we didn't know we could utilize this well.
Yep. So they didn't announce a new album yet, and it's unclear what's going to be happening, but like if they do make a new album, now I'm actually really excited. They have had the case before where they put out like, so after Invade, they put out an EP called Omen, and it had like two fantastic songs, Controller and Infamy, plus like a cover of Carry On Wayward Son, which was pretty interesting.
And they covered like a Metallica song.
Oh yeah, they did
too,
cover
right?
A Metallica song, there, but that cover was horrible. and then they put out Elite, which was not great, but hopefully like this is a good trajectory, and like I would be fine with these songs being on the new album. And Within the Ruins, like I'll give it to them that they work hard. They will put out like two albums in 2 years. Like that's just how they roll. So
yeah,
I'm interested in seeing what they do next. I'm actually interested again. Like this was like what got me back in, and I'm happy but also scared because I don't want to like be burned again.
Even with just a couple mediocre or bad albums under their belt, I would still just say like across the board, great band.
Yeah.
Like, keep supporting them, keep paying attention.
Yeah.
Because you know, clearly they still got it. So
yeah. All right. So speaking of things that are long coming, there's finally a fucking new Beyond Creation song. It's funny because Jimmy, our founder, posted in like our Facebook group like one day saying, like, hot take Beyond Creation, like you put out your album like 4 years
no,
ago.
No. You gotta say it the way he did because I thought it was pretty funny.
What was it?
He said room temperature take.
Oh yeah, you're right. Beyond Creation, you put out an album like 4 years ago and you're still putting out videos from it. and the day after, they put out a new song. So the song is called The Inversion, and this from an announced upcoming album titled Algorithm, spelled the edgy way, coming out in October.
Yep.
So, I mean, I love Beyond Creation. Well, first of all, the album artwork for this is kind of medium, but like it's just like generic Tech Death album artwork. But so I'm not super into this song, and let me explain. So Beyond Creation, if you were to describe them in like three elements, A, all of their songs are in 6/8 with triplet feel. This is like almost every single song of them. B, they love having like one melodic riff that they just kind of repeat over and over. And C, they will that's going to be a basic guitar riff with a sweet fretless bass underneath it. And with this formula, you can write like all Beyond Creation songs. And the thing here is, this is like basically that formula. And it's fucking over 7 minutes long. It's like, yeah. So it's just kind of repetitive and slow and mid-tempo. So like while it moment to moment, it's really sweet. And like it's the playing and whatnot is great and it sounds great. It's just kind of tedious to listen to.
Yeah. I feel like they don't write like entire albums full of bangers front to back, but when they're on, I feel like they're like Quo Vadis 2.0.
Yeah.
They do that like melodic, almost thrashy kind of vibe with like a death metal angle going on, and it's super cool when they're like really on, but when they're just playing things, just doing the Beyond Creation thing for 7 minutes, they kind of suffer from the death metal fatigue in their own unique like flavor within their own the context of their own sound.
Yeah, like it's just kind of it's good. None of it is bad. Like it's not even medium. It's good, but it's just kind of too much. And like
it's good, but it's not dynamic enough. And I think that's okay. That's a fair criticism. If you're going to be making songs and albums this long, it's not to knock the band, but I mean, they have to bring something new into the mix or something different.
Yeah.
We just got an Obscura album that, even tried a couple things different, and that's not even their best album by a long shot. So, yeah.
One thing, though, there was a concern that, like, with Forrest leaving the band and joining First Fragment, the bass player, the amazing fretless bass player, like, would the bass playing be up to par? And he was replaced with I don't know how to pronounce it, Hugo Dion Carot. And Hugo is great. Like, I'd listened to Hugo's other band, and, like, I had no fear that he would be amazing, and he's amazing. Like, there's no decrease in quality there. But like the problem isn't with Hugo. The problem is with the like band's overall formula just kind of being kind of formulaic.
Yeah, and that's not like necessarily a bad thing either. Yeah. I mean, sometimes the formula is awesome, but just for this particular song and the fact that they've been doing this particular very niche sound for two albums now.
Yeah.
We're kind of looking to them for a change. And especially with like Tech Death in general, like all the big bands, they've all really shown that they can bring something new to the table every time.
Yeah. And like The aura was like 7 years ago. And like this kind of has a really similar chord progression to like omnipresent perception. And like,
yeah,
we've heard this. Like, this is just kind of by the numbers for them. Like any other band, this is just like kind of way over any expectations we'd have. But like for Beyond Creation, like they've been doing this exact same thing for like 7 years now. And like, it's not new, right?
If this were any other band, I'd be like, oh shit, this is like an exciting new tech death band. But
yeah, like especially since we've waited for like 4 years for a new album, like them coming back with this is kind of just eh.
Yeah, it almost feels like a B-side for Earthborn Evolution or the Aura.
Yeah.
But that's not a bad thing.
So. Yeah.
Not a bad song.
Speaking of other
kind of long,
highly anticipated music, there's finally a new Behemoth song. So let's just get the edgy title out of the way. Like, God Equals Dog is like a really bad edgy title. But whatever. Doesn't really affect my enjoyment of the song, which I really like. So Behemoth... Sorry, go ahead.
It would have increased my enjoyment for the song if they went Dog Equals God.
Okay.
Because they're the same. They could have ordered it that way. And I would have been like, I love dogs. And I would have been more into it. But
oh, okay. I thought you were going for it the other way around. Sure. So this is kind of a standard-ish Behemoth song. It kind of combines what they've been doing for the past, like, 2-3 albums. I mean, if you're like, you know, if you listen to The Satanist and Evangelion, I think you can kind of see this one coming, right? But
yep.
With Behemoth, they're such a precious band that them doing more of the same is okay for me. Well, what do you think?
So, Behemoth is one band I really, really dislike judging by a single. Mm-hmm. And they're also a band where I really, really dislike that they do the whole press circuit. Like, I hate that they do the interviews and the singles and the promos for the albums and stuff. And I know that that's the hustle and they're a huge man and it's just whatever, but.
Do you want them to what just I do want the, from like...
Behemoth? I just give me the album. Mm-hmm. I know the merch is going to be great. I know the music videos are going to be cool or interesting or edgy. I know that they're going to do like something Satan themed, and I know Nurgle has some theatrical trick up his sleeve, and they're going to do a big tour. But we know all of that is going to happen. I wish they just, you know, kind of bucked the trend and said, "Here's an album."
Yeah, and I feel like they have the name to be able to do it, I guess, right?
Yeah, even just with a little bit of notice and like maybe like a teaser or a snippet, but just like listening like I don't they're a band that can that really excels in the album format. They can work their sound into like any kind of song structure. They have a really dynamic discography that delves in like death grind and death metal and black metal and this weird like almost like black and roll type thing they're doing these days and or even like black metal operas or whatever they do. It's interesting and cool, but don't just, it kind of feels like a tease to just like give me a single and especially a super edgy one, like
yeah.
God Equals Dog, you know?
It's interesting because the rest of the album seems to be a lot more nuanced than what they are even usually doing. Like the album title is I Loved You at Your Darkest, which is very unusual for Behemoth, I think.
Yeah.
And the artwork is like interesting, and the song titles are interesting.
The artwork is incredible.
Yeah. So like this song itself maybe is not a good representation of what we're gonna see on the rest of the album. I agree with you. Like,
and you know what? Maybe it's like misdirection, and that's also like the best for kind of criticism. Like, I just want more. That's ultimately what you want to be doing as a band, mm-hmm. and they've succeeded in that way. So, you know, maybe it's maybe I'm just fully suckered up for this new Behemoth album, and I don't even realize it. Yeah. So.
There you go. All right.
Voivod.
Yeah. That's...
Speaking of bands that have been around for a really long time.
Yep. All right. You go ahead for this one.
Man, this... So Voivod has a new single out, and it is so fucking cool. It is like Ozzy Osbourne playing, singing over a thrash metal song written by Luke LeMay of Gore Guts. Like...
That is the entire like tech thrash movement of the like early 90s, I think.
Yeah, I'm a fan of Voivod, and I've listened to a lot of their stuff, but sometimes they've just like doubled down on like the thrash element, mm-hmm. and Nothing Face is like a really cool album, but I feel like this is like a really modern take on what they usually do. Mm-hmm. It just sounds really good. It sounds way better than I would expect a Voivod song to sound like, you know?
Yeah. I mean, if you just go back and like listen to Ravenous Medicine, which is like their, you know, the hilariously terrible music video famous, but like, it's like the classic definitive song for the genre, which I'm trying to figure out which year that was from. 87. Yeah, like it's
right.
It's amazing how like you can totally see the through line from that song to this song, and they're like still in the game.
Yeah, and they're still killing it.
I wonder how old the dudes are.
Really old. They gotta be 50s, like.
Yeah, 55 seems. Yeah, their vocalist is, sorry, their drummer is 55. Yeah. Yeah. The original members are like in their 50s. There are some younger new members, but like the founding members are in their 50s.
And that's, of course, crazy.
They're. So, I mean, the history of Voivod is pretty interesting, because like the definitive aspect of the sound was the guitar player Piggy, Denis D'Amour. He passed away in 2005. And like for years, Voivod kind of meandered. Like they didn't know what to do with their sound. They just put out like an album of like B-sides that like Piggy had lying around. And it took them like several years to kind of figure out what they want to do, where they want to go forward. And like they put out two posthumous albums of Piggy material before like actually 8 years later making a new original album. And so yeah, it's interesting that they've been able to like come back and like still keep it going, and like not every band can do that, right? Like long running bands, imagine if like I'm trying to find like an analog. Imagine if like, well, James Hetfield is like a bad example because he also is a singer, but like if like Kerry King like passed away in like 2003, would Slayer still be a thing today? Probably not. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or even just look at Pantera.
Pantera's gone. Yeah. That's a good example.
Yeah.
No, of course, Jeff Hanneman passed away, but like that was like farther.
The thing with that one, it, like Slayer kind of hit the jackpot with Gary Holt, and he's not only an outstanding fill-in for Jeff Hanneman, not an entire replacement, but they also had chemistry, because he had a snake bite or something like that and couldn't tour, so Gary Holt ended up filling in,
and it just
kind of worked out really well.
And also, I feel like Jeff passed away after the band hit their low point and recovered.
Yeah.
So like at that point, they weren't fighting two battles at the same time. Okay, this conversation isn't going anywhere. Let's move on. So
it was kind of a nice little dive into old thrash, but
yeah. We should do like a deeper dive at some point.
Sure.
So how much do you like Bloodshot Dawn?
They're pretty cool.
I think their first two albums are amazing. Like Demons is one of my favorite albums of all time. Their recent album from this year is extremely unremarkable because they lost all but their vocalist. And especially the guitar player, what's his name? His name is Benjamin, last name Eller, I think. He was a student of Christian Münzner. And like that really showed, and in like a really unique style that defined the band's lead playing. And him leaving was like a huge, huge blow to the band, and that the band is not the same anymore. And he joined Scar Symmetry, by the way, who still haven't put out like the Singularity Part 2. It's been 4 years, guys. Come on. Anyway, so I came across this Japanese band called Geist of Trinity. They're a three-piece, and they're basically the Bloodshot Dawn Demon sound to some extent. It's pretty cool. So they have, you know, one guy playing guitar and doing vocals, one guy doing bass, one guy doing drums. And not every song of theirs on the album is like Bloodshot Dawn. They also have a bit more like Japanese melodeathy sound, but there are several songs on the album where it feels like they're really clearly aping the good Bloodshot Dawn sound, and they're doing a great job of replicating it.
Kind of like taking that trajectory and running with it.
Yep. This is really solid, like thrash-y, melodeath-y thing. So if you're into that sound, go check it out. Like they seem to be really good. They have good production, good songs, good energy. Yeah.
Yeah, good find. I'm just giving this a pass now, and it looks really cool. I also have like a huge respect for three pieces that do like any kind of technical music.
Yeah.
There's something about it that is it.
Go check out Christian.
It just gives the music a different character.
Yeah. Christian, you'd like them.
Yeah, I checked out that Christian single that you guys talked about on the last podcast, and that was super cool. I need to go back and listen to more of their stuff.
Yep. All right. Speaking of other small finds, Science of...
I have a segue.
Oh, okay.
Speaking of bands who release their albums in episodic material and spend a lot of time in between albums.
Yes.
There's a new Dolemad single.
Yes. So we talked about the teaser for the new Dolemad album, Cosmic Gods Episode 2 Astro Atlas with Eden. So if you've missed our previous conversations on this album, this is like a favorite of mine and Eden's, that like a pet favorite of ours. It's basically...
Me too.
Yeah. Championed by one Greek guy, Thanasis Lightbridge is his.
Yeah.
So it's... Dolemad is like really fucking weird. They're like symphonic power metal. With instead of vocals, they have choirs, and they have a lot of like industrial elements. And they like tell a story through their albums, and they have a bunch of like side bands. Whatever. They had an amazing...
I'm trying to think of like a shorthand moniker for their genre, and I would call it tech synth opera metal,
space opera metal. Just call it that.
Mine's better.
Sure. they had an amazing Duel of the Fates cover. If you missed that, go check it out. But yeah, finally, after like a billion years, they have a new album coming out, and finally, they have a new single called "The Nova Temple," and it's great. This one's basically like breakcore synth power metal.
I can't quantify it. I don't have like the lexicon or the shop talk needed, but something about this single makes me feel like the guy stepped up his game. Like there's like something about like the production or the composition itself that makes it feel a little bit tighter than what he was doing before.
Yeah, I do know what you mean. Like nothing is different. The production is the same. The elements are the same, but it's all just kind of more fine tuned.
Yeah, this is like if I were to like show someone this band, this is a single I would go to. I would be like, check this out.
Yeah.
See if you can get into this.
Yeah. And then I'd show them the Duel of the Fates cover. I love Duel of the Fates.
Yeah, and then I'm like, and then by then, just go listen to the rest of their stuff.
Yeah, so it's always good to see like these weird ass bands keep doing their thing, and especially like insanely ambitious ones like this. So go check out Dol Amad.
Yeah, the album, mad shout out.
The album's coming out this week on Friday.
Sick.
Yeah.
See, that's a great press release cycle. You got like an announcement, and then like an announcement, and then a single, and then it comes out in a week.
Yeah.
Just take note, record labels.
Yeah, but like Behemoth's album's coming out in 2 months. That's way too much.
Yeah, way too much.
All right. Speaking of other like minor random finds, there's this band, Science of Disorder. It's basically Nevermore. Like, if you just go and listen to this, the production is like Nevermore, but slightly harsher. The riffing is Jeff Loomis. The vocals are trying really hard to be Worrell. Which, this stuff bums me, because it's like 80% of the way there. But it all just makes me remember that, like, Worrell is gone, and we're never getting any more material out of him. And, like, Nevermore were incredible. Fucking, I'm super bummed every time I hear shit like this. Yeah. It just doesn't scratch the itch.
I got nothing to add on that one.
It just doesn't scratch the itch. Like, Nevermore wasn't just a sum of its parts. All the parts were amazing, and still it was more than the sum of its parts.
For sure, and just some bands, you know, some bands get there, and it's with any like influential band, they just do something that no other band can replicate. And even when, you know, the writing's on the wall for some bands, or I'm rambling. I don't know where I was going with that. Never mind.
It's hard to like go anywhere with this. Like, Nevermore, like, if another band came out and was just doing the same thing, it just wouldn't work. Like, it's just
for sure
Nevermore special. Okay. Speaking of, I don't know what the fuck. Testament have a cryptocurrency. Like, Testament have been going down the rabbit hole for a while now. Like, you remember that thing with their like the weed app, and like the video where like one of Chuck Billy was like talking about his weed app, and the other guy was like just zoning out during the video, and like they were talking about like aliens and shit. And now we have a big announcement coming soon about huge contests and a promotion agreement between Testament and the hot new cryptocurrency Privacy, without an A. What? So
this is almost as weird as like, no, this is weirder than Keep of Kolesin doing like those pay card
which promotion, later turned cross out to promotion be a pyramid things. Scheme, by the way.
Okay, so it's basically the same.
well, yeah, but like, who looks at the cryptocurrency market right now and says this is the time to be going into cryptocurrency?
I don't know, maybe like they were just like, wow, a cool cross promotion with the new hip youngsters and their fake money on the internet. Let's go after that.
I would be disappointed. Because
we want to be relevant.
I'll be disappointed if you can't use this cryptocurrency to buy weed on their app.
If you can't do that, then I'm writing... sorry, Gene Hoagland, but you're fired.
He's not even tagged in this. Chuck Billy and Eric Peterson are. I don't know. And they also tagged Son of a Bitcoin.
Gene's just like asking his son or something, what's cryptocurrency? Should I be tagged in this? Get me off of it. I have drum clinics to do.
And like the way this is, okay, so the way this status is worded is very cryptocurrency, in that like a promotion agreement between Testament. Like, what the fuck is a promotion agreement? Like, just why are you being so marketing-y? Like, why don't you just say like a exciting partnership, or like something more normal, right? Who the fuck says
10 years down the line, it Testament have their own building on Wall Street.
God.
Just their own offices.
Yeah, and like the world runs on privacy.
And like it's literally Metalocalypse.
Where
Testament controls the world's economy.
They start printing physical privacy coins and they have Testament members on the coins.
Fuck.
God.
Just don't. If you're an old thrash fan, you know, there's better ways to market to young people and stuff like that.
Speaking of marketing yourself to young people, this story is a bit old at this point, but like, Pestilence. So,
anyways, that Doug Moore orchestra is really sick.
Yes, let's just.
We should talk about Puron.
Let's talk about the Doug Moore thing. Okay, Doug Moore was a great writer. Then he quit, and now he's focusing on Puron. He's a great guy. He has the best hot takes on Facebook. And his articles, when he used to write them, the black market, they were great. And now this is fucking weird.
This is fucking cool. It's, I don't know what you're talking about.
It is cool, don't get me wrong. But like, so this came out of nowhere. Him and a guitar player from some industrial metal band called Psalm Zero, they got together with a like 17-piece chamber orchestra where the orchestra just plays like ominous sounding stuff. It's a cover of a Puron song. I didn't realize
that. It is a Puron song, yeah.
But not like arranged like a metal song, instead like a weird orchestra song. And Doug just kind of screams over, "This is fucking weird." I like
it. Yeah, there's like so basically they like don't do like the blast beat parts.
Mm-hmm.
And they just play the weird notes and weird dissonant and jarring like arrangements,
yeah,
basically. And Doug Moore just screams over them, and
so
and he performs it as he would on the album or mm-hmm. or live. And so basically it is a cover, and it's just super, super cool.
It's hard to do something like this and not have it be cringe compilation material, but I think he pulls it off.
Absolutely. I'm going back to Gorguts again,
mm-hmm.
but I would, they did that, on Colored Sands. They did the Battle of Kamdo,
mm-hmm.
and that to me sounded like it was with a real orchestra. And that was like one Luke LeMay vocal performance away from being as cool as this.
Yeah. Yeah, and of course, like, Gorguts is the creator of this sound, so makes sense that that kind of lineage is applicable here. And yeah, it's great. And I gotta say, like, for years, I always felt like, you know, I was always super into Gorguts, and like I'd be like, oh yeah, there's this weird band Gorguts, check it out, like they make this weird thing that like nobody else does. But in the past few years, that sound has exploded and gained popularity, I think because Gorguts made the comeback, and then other bands were, yeah, like
they've been super fashionable, like aping Gorguts has been like very like sexy in the metal scene,
mm-hmm. and I'm happy with that, and I'm glad that that sound is kind of being taken into all kinds of directions, and Puron are a really good way to do that. Like, wait, they have a very, yeah, good way of doing that.
And I'm actually gonna do a Cody meme here and liken it to some super specific niche thing to this super specific niche thing.
Yeah.
And so there's this YouTuber called Adam Neely,
yeah,
who you showed me him, and he did, for one of his projects, he did and he made a YouTube video about it, but he basically took like a jazz orchestra and he wrote dubstep parts out to it in like waveform and added it to the like orchestral instructions as like a display of like how sheet music can make more than just standard like instrument sounds, mm-hmm. and he basically made like a dubstep jazz performance,
mm-hmm.
Performed by like an 18-piece orchestra or whatever with, and that was really cool. And that was a kind of a weird performance that made me think of this one as well. And I like having like little collections of these super weird specific niche things I can refer to. That,
so. God damn it. That oddly makes sense. Adam Neely is great, by the way. Shout out to him. Go subscribe to his channel. He does like, he started out doing like bass videos, but now he does like weird music theory things. And he does it in a way that is both super accessible and super interesting. And he has great production values. And he's
yeah, really cool. They're like short video essays on like music and music philosophy. And they're, oh, and I'm really happy you showed me him because he's like the gold standard for video essays in music.
Yeah. He's fantastic. So, yeah, go check it out.
Yeah.
Okay. So, short shout out. So, Metal Allegiance. Do you know what the fuck Metal Allegiance is? This has always been confusing to me. So,
I'm like vaguely, like, is it a tour or a band?
I think
or
it's
an
like
album,
it's a thing. So, like,
oh, that clears it up. Thank you.
It's kind of a super group, but it has like rotating members, so it's more like a project, right? I don't know if there's like a central thing to it, like the central driving member.
It's kind of like Roadrunner United, but without the label.
Nuclear Blast is kind of behind it, after all.
Okay. There we go.
But it's not as strongly tied to, like, the Roadrunner United was about the legacy of the label. This is just, like, legacy of metal in general. Because they have, like, Portnoy, Alex Skolnick, David Ellefson. Apparently it's made by Mark Menge. I don't know who that guy is. Probably some, like, famous guy from, like, some old metal band. I'm trying to look it up right now. No, he's known for Metal Allegiance. Okay, so he's like a guy who keeps putting this project together. And like, if you look at people who have been involved with Metal Allegiance, the list is fucking insane. You have like Portnoy, Ellefson, Chuck Billy, Gary Holt, Troy Sanders, Randy Blythe, Alyssa Whitegloves. Who else? So Max Cavalera, Andreas Kisser, yep. And that's the story here. So there's a song they put out called Voodoo of the Godsend. And this song has Max Cavalera and Andreas Kisser on it, which is like a big deal. Oh, actually, no. So the guitars on the track were recorded by Alex Skolnick, of all people. But Andreas Kisser is going to be performing it live. So,
right.
Yeah, I mean, if they end up sharing the stage for this song, this is going to be the first time they've like done something together since like Max quits Sepultura. And that's, of course, like been one of the most famous, biggest rifts in metal, second only to like Megadeth, Metallica, I think.
Right.
So that's just an interesting tidbit to know since we talked a bunch about Soulfly. I don't know if they're actually going to be together performing this live. This Metal Allegiance album has like, or like Metal Allegiance in the past, I've had like Matt Heafy, Jamie Jasta, Phil Anselmo, fuck him. Like, there's so many fucking big names in this, but Metal Allegiance always sounds so fucking generic and boring. Like, it's amazing how you can put so much talent together and end up with something that is so unremarkable.
I kind of feel like it's like a byproduct of the monumental task it would be to like put these artists together. Like it, like I almost feel like the music is a result of like the bureaucracy of a collaboration like this.
Yeah, I mean, it makes,
especially if it's just one guy doing this full time, because that's what it feels like. This Mark Manji guy is just kind of like trying to make like clobber these collaborations together.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. I mean, Roadrunner did it, but that was like their one label. But even still, like, I think Roadrunner United is amazing. Like, it's actually,
yeah, Roadrunner United is kind of a different animal though, because they put a lot of money into like flying people out and like,
yeah,
having them actually collaborate in the studio and stuff, and with Metal Allegiance, I don't get the vibe. Yeah, that's exactly. Really happening,
so, like,
here.
My point is that either do it right or just don't do it, because otherwise it's just a waste of everyone's time and money. Like, it just ends up being like super garbage.
I'm always in the more music is good is better camp, and especially when it's something as remarkable as like getting two guys on stage who haven't been on stage together for like decades and have like don't want to be associated with each other.
Wouldn't it be even more amazing if the music was actually good? Like, I mean, Cavalera Conspiracy, for example, right? That was Max and Igor burying the hatchet and then like getting back together after like decades of like not playing together, and that was like really good music too. So like, that's good. But this is just like, it's
right,
it's like, okay, they got back together but the music is turbo boring, so like, eh.
Okay, so for me, like, that's not the end game here. The end game is just making these artists want to collaborate with each other beyond Metal Allegiance.
Yeah, which I don't think is
going to happen. I don't know if that's, and I don't know if there's like many examples of that happening, or if there's like any kind of label obligations or whatever it is. But I feel like just putting more eggs into one basket is kind of, I don't know.
You realize that the saying putting all your eggs into one basket is generally used negatively?
That's why I caught myself. Tried to hand it over to you.
Okay, I'm
so you could save
I'm just
me.
Dropping it. No, I'm not going to save you. I'm just going to let you dig your own grave. Okay, one last thing.
Buddy, you let me dig my own grave the moment you let me onto this podcast.
All right. This is amazing. We didn't get a chance to talk about it when it came out a couple weeks ago, but now we will. And that is Neckbeard Death Camp. Holy shit, this is amazing. So this is a black metal band that just fucking roasts over the coals all the Nazi bullshit in black metal. So the... I just have to read all of this. The album title is White Nationalism is for Basement Dwelling Losers. The song titles are Cucked Intro. The Left Are the Real Fascists, which is fucking just pure, like, amazing. Zyklon B with B slashed in the 4chan fashion. Triple, yep. 3XL Obersturmfuhrer Leather Duster. Incel Warfare. Please respond, parentheses, I showed you my penis. And my favorite, the fetishization of, with a V, Asian woman despite a demand for a pure white race. Fucking, like, I'm just doing like the fucking kissing the air thing. Like, fucking, man, this is amazing.
Savage
as fuck.
I really like their stage names too. Kriegmeister Hate Storm and Super Commander Uber Wiener Schnitzel and Hail's Comrades. Fuck.
And this album is dedicated to Richard Spencer, Jeff Shope, David Duke, the NSM, Bedroom Fourth Reich Bands, and Nazi Girls That Add Me on Facebook. Just fucking amazing. And like, this has been making the waves. And like, the thing is, it's amazing. It's really good. Like, if it was just the gimmick, then you'd just laugh and move on. But like, this is really good black metal. Like, it's great. And like, the aesthetic is great. Like, they, if you look at their merch, which they have a bunch of merch, and like, it's all like done in like super high quality and like imitations of like black metal aesthetic. It's just, yep. Man, this is fucking amazing. And like, this just like, so some people were complaining that it's not subtle. Like, no, fucking, you don't need subtlety to do this. Like, this is just right. And like, cutting like deep, 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 especially like fucking fetishization of Asian women despite a demand for pure white race. This goes out to like all the anime avatars on Twitter. Man,
it's great. It's fucking great.
And it's also on like, you know, streaming services and that. Just go listen to it. It's fucking great. Buy their merch. Exterminate the Bedroom Reich.
Their merch is sold out, buddy.
God damn it, they should make more merch. This is fucking just top notch. No, their cassettes are still available.
Yeah.
And their stickers are still available.
Yeah, buy that.
Top fucking notch.
Just give them money because Nazis are bad.
Nazis are bad, and like calling Nazis out is great, and like calling them out in this fashion is fucking like, man. Ooh. Okay. I'm just like extremely ecstatic about this, as you can tell. I just love this. All right. Cool people time. You got anything for me, bro?
I've been playing Wolfenstein. Speaking of killing Nazis.
Which one? Old Blood, the first New one? Order.
New Order, yes. Yeah. And that's it's just super fun pick up and play type game. Mm-hmm. I get home from work and I turn it on and I play like a level and I beat it and then I just move on to the next level and
yep.
It's kind of been perfect lately, so that's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Other than that, not too much going on over here for me.
For me, I've been playing a bunch of games that I kind of... So I've been playing Salt and Sanctuary, for example, which is a... It's made by the dudes who made the famous Xbox Live arcade game, like a Dishwasher Samurai or whatever. I don't know.
Right.
I think. But this game is basically a side-scrolling Dark Souls game. Like, it's just Dark Souls. The aesthetic, the storytelling, the combat. But it's as a 2D side-scrolling, like, Metroidvania-style platformer. And I'm really into it. Like, it came out a couple years ago, but, like, it came out on Switch... like this week, so I've been spending a bunch of time with it. I love it. It just scratches the like Dark Souls itch that I've been, you know, there hasn't been a new Souls game for a while, so this is just perfect timing for me. What else?
Okay, I actually have something. Okay. So I have a food recommendation. Ooh. Yes. So A&W,
what's that?
They're in America, right?
Not sure.
Oh shit.
What's A and W? Is that what you said?
Yeah. Yeah. They're a fast food chain in Canada.
I don't think we have that here in America.
What?
Oh, we do apparently, but they're really not prominent. There's actually one pretty close to me, apparently, but
yeah, they're founded in America. That's what I thought. Anyways, you should go to A&W because they after 100 years, they finally released a veggie burger. Hmm. And it is, I'm not going to say it's the best veggie burger, but it is at least top three.
Interesting.
I've tried a lot of veggie burgers. I've tried a lot of like vegan burgers. Hmm. I've gone to a ton of different chains. I've made my own. I've bought like store-bought. I've done like recipes on the internet. And the A&W one is fucking amazing.
A veggie burger.
It is so good.
A good veggie burger is super amazing, but anything else, it's fucking garbage, I think. Like, veggie burgers that are either, like, super great or really bad. Like,
yeah, and this is absolutely a super great one. And you can get it at a fast food chain, and I think that's so, so great.
Yeah.
Because you can just drive through. You can get it on your way to work, on your way home from work, just out and about. Like, I don't know. I feel like companies are starting to embrace the mindset of, like, we don't need to eat meat every day. Yeah. And this is the first time I've seen it done in a really, really good way where the company has, like, excelled. Mm-hmm. Fast food companies have always had, like, or have tried to at least have vegetarian options on the menu. But this is like the first time I've seen like a company like even push it. They've been like marketing it nonstop. And nice. I just want to give it a shout out because it is delicious. And yeah, I'm stoked on it because I, as a vegetarian, sometimes you're just like stuck eating the same thing for a while.
I can understand that. I don't think A&W is a big chain here. Like, they're basically not, like, today is the first time I've ever heard of them. So I don't know how easy it will be for people to find those, but if you do, hey, go check them out.
At least here up in Canada, there's like one or two in every city. So
interesting. So yeah. The one veggie burger that I like is the Trader Joe's one. Trader Joe's usually have like pretty good options in that area, I think. I don't know. Is Trader Joe's a thing in Canada?
It is not.
Ah, fuck.
So we're doing a trade.
Okay, then. Interesting. I'm trying to think of, like, is there any, like, food that I can universally recommend, but not really. Like, food is a very specific thing for me. Like, everybody has different tastes, so hard to say. Veggie burgers can be interesting, though. Like, yeah, if you find a lot of people might have a negative opinion of them because they've had, like, bad veggie burgers. But, like, a good veggie burger is just, like, better than, like, most normal burgers.
To go into a little more detail, the A&W one, they emulate the grease. Like they get the I'm going in for like a greasy fast food burger vibe down really well. And even though it doesn't taste like lean beef, it is definitely like it's spiced really well. It has like really good seasoning.
That's,
and
that's the thing, like,
good sauces on the burgers. Like, A&W, it's not like a $2 burger. You're not going there for on the cheap. You're going there for a $12 meal. Mm.
Okay.
But.
Canadian dollars for our listeners. Like,
$12 Canadian dollars. That's like eight American dollars.
Yeah, because like $12 for a burger is like San Francisco prices here in America.
yeah.
So the thing is, I think for vegetarian/vegan food, I think the food that tries to like emulate meat eater food is usually pretty bad. But food that tries to be its own thing, like that one, right? It doesn't try to be meat; it just is own thing. I think
yeah.
It ends up being like really delicious. Like I like a black bean, like Southwest flavored like veggie burger. Sounds great, but like when they try to use like tofu or whatever to like emulate the meat, it just ends up being like super super gross, and like just don't do that to yourself. Like, even if you're a vegetarian, just don't do that to yourself. It's also
the only other veggie burger I would recommend is there's some like Costco brand nut burgers out there.
Interesting.
That are interesting, but
Costco is underrated in terms of food. Like, food can be really good items there.
For sure.
Hot take on, like, diet. And, of course, like, this is just my opinion. Like, don't take this as advice. Oh, yeah, the Costco Dr. Prager's ones, right? Those are really good. Is that the one you're talking about?
I think the ones I've tried are no-name brand, but were, like, from Costco. Okay. But doesn't matter.
Okay. I was going to say, like, in general, if you're doing some sort of, like, exclusion-style diet, I think trying to eat foods that emulate the food that you're excluding is not a strong mentality if you want to do this diet in perpetuity. What do you think about this?
I agree, but I think that,
of course, like what works for anyone is different, but like if you're trying to like start out, I think it's good to like have a clean break.
Yeah, I think vegan diets are really difficult, and that's more of a lifestyle change than a dietary one. But I think that a vegetarian diet is sustainable, and it's also a lot easier than what people expect. Mm-hmm. And most people, they're like hard line, like, gotta cut meat out, never eat meat again. And I think that's a toxic mentality as well. I feel like you can go out and enjoy a meat meal with family or friends, or, you know, like have turkey dinner with your grandma who slaved over the oven for 8 hours. Like, that's not gonna, whatever reasons you're doing it, whether it be like moral or health reasons or environmental reasons, having a meat meal every once in a while isn't going to drastically impact the cause that you're supporting.
And if it helps you stay in your diet for a longer period of time, it ends up having a longer term beneficial effect, right?
Yeah. And as well, like, I think it's like important to be acclimated to meat because we are omnivores. And I've heard of people like being on vegetarian diets for 5 to 6 years or something and then getting really sick when they eat meat. And you don't want to have that when it's something that people share in their meals every day, right?
Yeah.
I mentioned I'm vegetarian and I celebrate cool substitutes for like meat because I exclude that from my diet, and it's cool to like be able to emulate that and still in a way that supports my diet, but it's not a lifestyle thing. And it is also not a big deal either. Like, it's easy to do and you should look into it, but you just need to be conscious of consuming protein in other ways. And that's just beans, potatoes, eggs, meat, dairy.
Also micronutrients like certain vitamins and whatnot. Yeah.
And you can supplement.
Yeah, exactly.
Those.
As long as you supplement your essentials, then you can do the diet totally sustainably. I wonder, like, since I don't really do a vegetarian diet, like, is it cheaper or more expensive or comparable to doing like a regular diet?
It's honestly like super, super similar. It's very samey. Like if all my friends, like if I go to McDonald's with a group of people, I get a large fries, a milkshake, and that's like dairy and potatoes. Mm-hmm. And it's not like a super healthy meal, but
I mean, you're going to McDonald's.
you're going to McDonald's, right? I'm usually pretty content with that. Mm-hmm. It's not like you can do other things too. You can get like a muffin or like because they have all day breakfast now. And
yeah,
blueberry muffins are fine. Often I just find I'm like not like having like cereal for breakfast and you know, a lunch thing for lunch and a dinner thing for dinner. It just kind of like for in order for me to sustain a vegetarian diet, I just have to eat like more wholesome foods all the time type deal.
Mm-hmm. That can be good for you in general.
Yeah. And it, you know, like yesterday I had a spinach and feta, like a slice of spinach and feta pizza, and I washed it down with a beer, and that was literally my breakfast. And that sounds like insane, but like that was like my vegetarian option.
I mean, it sounds delicious, like, honestly.
Yeah. It's great. And I don't know. People just like overthink it a lot. And it's really like unless you're like going for like you're kind of a bit of a fitness nut, or you lead like a really active lifestyle where you're burning lots of calories as well. You can still like eat healthy and sustain yourself on a vegetarian diet like super easily.
Yeah,
you don't have to think that.
There's a lot of options available.
Is there meat in that? Can I have it without meat? No, get something else.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good talk.
Anyways, that was my rant. You got me going.
Yeah, no, it's fine. It is different content. Like we don't talk about stuff like this normally. So yeah, it's fine. I like it.
Thanks. Any other cool people stuff?
Super random. I'm really excited for Fantastic Beasts 2: The Crimes of Grindelwald.
Yeah, I need to go to the movies. It's been a while for me.
Yeah, this movie's not coming out for a while either, but like, I don't know. So I'm a Harry Potter fan. Like, oh, whatever. Like, that's controversial in some circles. Whatever. Fuck you. Like, Harry Potter's cool. And I really enjoyed I don't like the Harry Potter movies, but I really enjoyed the Fantastic Beasts movie. because it was kind of a different take on that world, right? Like, I always am interested in different takes on established franchises. And the new one looks super hype. They're going a lot into the lore of the world. Like, they're doing a lot of backstory stuff. And how into Harry Potter are you?
I'm a huge fan of the films. I never read the books, and I know that's sacrilegious to some people, but reading's whatever. Overrated. So,
are you familiar with have you seen Fantastic Beasts, the first one?
Yeah, that movie was great. Yeah, I really liked Eddie Redmayne in that.
And yeah,
normally find him to be a bit pretentious.
So, yeah, so the second movie seems to be going into like Dumbledore's backstory and like basically Wizard Hitler. played by Johnny Depp.
Yep.
And I'm really excited to see like how that shakes out. Like, if they do get to do the whole 5-movie plan of like leading all these events leading up to the original series, there's a lot of questions of like what they're going to cover, how they're going to cover it, and like what they'll do. But they can do some really cool stuff with it. And the cast of this movie is ridiculous. Like, there's Jude Law in it. Playing Dumbledore. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And the trailer looks hype.
And just the hook of Jude Law just being like, oh, I'm a sassy, dangerous Dumbledore. Like, it's, I don't know.
Yeah. Super cool. Like, the thing about Dumbledore is like, he's such a presence in the books and like the original series, but like, we never really get to see him like go all out, right? Like, he's always kind of a mentor role, and only in like Half-Blood Prince, when he's like taking Harry to get the Horcrux, like, we kind of see him like let loose a little bit, but we never get to see him at his prime. So it's
even with like the huge confrontation where are we doing spoilers for Harry Potter?
Spoilers like... for like decade old book series.
Dumbledore dies. Yeah. Even in that scene, he just sits there and takes it.
Yeah,
it's not like a favorable send off for an iconic character, you know.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason why he does that, but still, So
I wanted my Super Saiyan battle with Dumbledore. I didn't get it.
What, you want Dumbledore to fucking like blow Draco Malfoy's head off?
You have to admit that's more interesting.
True. And when like the
like this man who's protective of all thing, all living people and creatures and especially children, fucking like just eviscerates Draco Malfoy. That would be amazing. And then spars with Snape. Yeah. Oh my god.
Just fucking
give me that movie. Where was Michael Bay? Just
fucking turn Draco into like a pile of dust, and then like Snape's like loses an arm and an eye, and and like the whole building burns down.
Like, god damn it! Why is J.R. Rowling so edgy?
But no, like that's Dumbledore's thing. Like at this age, is like his powers and his wisdom and his like.
I get it.
Gravitas, but yeah, so like young Dumbledore, so that's why young Dumbledore is interesting, right? Because then you get to see like
that is why young Dumbledore is
you get to see him before he was wise and like when he was like young and strong and like ambitious. So
yeah, we get to see Super Saiyan Dumbledore,
hopefully, but not gay Dumbledore apparently, because that's too controversial for the screen. You know that stuff, right? You know what I'm So the interesting thing is like. They're supposed to do 5 movies and like they're supposed to be like revolving around Newt, but so originally the original pitch for the first movie was just like kind of wacky adventures with this like wacky wizard, right? But then they brought in Grindelwald and the story of the series kind of turned into like the battle of Dumbledore versus Grindelwald and like how Grindelwald was Wizard Hitler. Do you know that stuff of the lore?
No, I don't.
So. Grindelwald, Johnny Depp's character, is like the owner of the like Deathly Hallows, and like he's this like he's basically Wizard Hitler, and he wants to like exterminate the Muggles. And in the 1940s, he launches a crusade to do this, like parallels, like, you know, that was the only weird thing happening in Europe in the 40s. So like, that's actually like a big formative thing about the like current timeline in the Wizarding World. And like, eventually, right, like he gets captured and defeated and whatever, but like, it takes decades. And then like, that sets up like Voldemort. So the interesting thing is like, this is like a really large story that spans like countries and like characters and wars, whereas Newt is that like one wacky guy, right? Eddie Redmayne's character. So it'd be interesting to see how they juggle the focus of the story. Are they gonna like basically elevate him as, oh, he was there all along and like he was actually a hero in all of this? Or is he just, you know, like, is it gonna be like Cloverfield where like, you know, it all happens around him? It'll be interesting to see how they cover that. And I want to see that big scale. And then I want to see like the series end with like the last movie or the last two movies or whatever should be like Voldemort's like original reign of terror and then his defeat. And then it leads directly into like the original series.
That would be really cool. Yeah, basically it's like, is Newt going to be like the Rogue One character, mm-hmm, or is Newt going to be like a Johnny Depp character in Pirates of the Caribbean?
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Interesting to see. Yeah, so I'm hyped for these movies. And it's directed by David Yates, so it's, you know, it's not like they're just shitting these out. David Yates is a talented guy.
Absolutely.
All right. That's all I got.
Just a last thing to touch on before we sign off. I've been watching Jerry Seinfeld's Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee. Mm-hmm. Because I can just turn it on, and if I crash right away, it's no big deal. Because it's just comedians in cars getting coffee, mm-hmm, and talking.
Except for like the Obama episode where it's like a little bit more high stakes.
Yeah. There's some effort put in. No, that is a great talk show. I've ever since I started listening to our own podcast, and I've sort of been looking for more content to like just listen to, mm-hmm, and even watch sometimes. And this is great. Lots of like references made and like stories they tell about like famous people. And I've actually like gone on to look at like a bunch of old like Johnny Carson stuff and some Bob Einstein stuff and a bunch of like old comedy classic stuff that I've never seen or heard of before. And it's super cool to have all these references and people that I don't generally think of in media as like entities or look at their work. It's just kind of been like a cool way of exploring that, and it's also entertaining to boot. So,
yep. I haven't watched like all of the episodes, but it is pretty.
There's a lot of episodes.
Yeah. It is really solid, and it's now on Netflix. Like it used to not be on Netflix, but now it is. So
yeah, it used to be a web series. Yep. That kind of blew my mind because I was like, how did they get Jerry Seinfeld to do a web series?
I mean, probably Jerry Seinfeld wanted to do a web series and like just found the highest bidder. I don't think you can get Jerry Seinfeld to do anything.
No, I know. The guy names his price.
Yeah.
It's just it's
what's
like,
the deal with Seinfeld?
It's cool that he's kind of savvy about it. Okay, so my favorite bit in Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee that I've seen so far, it was like the highest effort bit. It was they did like a cross promotion with Zach Galifianakis and Between Two Ferns. Yeah, that episode was so fucking good. At the end, Zach Galifianakis is like spoofing Seinfeld and he's like, what's the deal with talk show guests? Pretty lame, aren't they?
Yeah, that one was really good. Like, is that gonna come back?
That one was really funny.
Between Two Ferns, like, he hasn't made one for quite a while, and then he made this one.
I hope so. I mean, he's set a pretty high bar for himself.
True. Oh, speaking of like reality-ish comedy-ish shows, man, Who Is America Is Savage.
Oh yeah, that's another thing I'm completely caught up and on and have been watching. Yeah, that show is incredible.
I mean, Sacha Baron Cohen is like a madman, and like he just fucking cuts deep. And also, by the way, Nathan Fielder is a producer on that show.
A writer
and a producer. Yeah, true.
Yeah.
How much of Nathan for You have you watched?
I watched the entire first season, and then on the streaming service I used to watch the first season on, they didn't have the second one. It just went straight to the third. So just the first season for now until I get my hands on the second.
Okay, you have to watch the rest. Like
I'm going to. It's very high on my list.
It should
right now.
Be very, very high. Like the finale of the latest season, which is unclear if it's a series finale or not, is like a 2-hour-ish long, like, I don't want to say mockumentary. It's a documentary. It's like fucking, man, it just transcends. Like, you have to keep going.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Like, so, okay. I just want to spoil the premise for you. You know the Bill Gates impersonator he has?
No.
Okay, so that, in the first season, he gets hired some guy who is like a Bill Gates impersonator. And like he does a bit with him. And then he brings the guy back a couple times throughout the seasons. But then, in the finale of the latest season, he goes deep into the guy. He finds, like, he, throughout the episodes, like, kept noticing that the guy, like, experienced some past regrets about some past relationships. And he decides to find the person, like, the one that got away for that guy. And they turned that into a documentary. And in the meantime, like, uncover so much about the guy and, like, about himself. And, like, it's just fucking, what the fuck? It's insane.
So, for anyone who doesn't know, Nathan Fielder is a guy who found a loophole in, I think it was Britain or something, where they had a law about smoking indoors.
No, it's America.
In public.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so it was America. Smoking indoors in public places. He found a loophole in the law where you're allowed to do it if it's for a play or stage production. So he got, he opened up an audience section in the bar, and then he got people to come in and smoke, and then he just had like a couple audience members watching people just like be regular patrons, and then he took all the recorded conversations and actions and rewrote this,
recast people,
just this regular patronage into a play, and then he got the people who came in to smoke at the bar to watch the actors replay what they did, and it's the kind of high level. It's high effort content.
Insane. Like, imagine Sacha Baron Cohen, insane. But he was giving business advice to businesses. But instead of like trying to troll them, he's just like going like 5 levels deeper and like trolling himself and the viewer and like doing like absolutely insane meta things. It's you have to watch Nathan for You. It's like.
Yeah,
it's a fantastic, fantastic show. It's on Comedy Central, I think.
And Who Is America is also amazing.
Yes, in different ways.
But yeah,
but
different ways. But definitely, if you appreciate one, you should appreciate the other. I feel like Nathan for You though is pretty universal.
Yeah.
Like that's just like that's like air. It's like airplane tier comedy, like the movie Airplane.
Yeah, it's
like,
wholesome.
It's just wholesome, super amazing, super funny.
Yeah. All right. We're done.
That was a great episode.
It was.
So we should go.
Yes. Just end our suffering already.
Yep.
I'm talking deep into the mic right now. Can you hear it?
Title still exists.
ASMR. Okay, goodbye.
Wrap around. Bye.